This ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no hold'em. Hey. So lay your cards down, 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 down. So park your Lexus. Ooh. And throw your keys up. Hey. Stick around, round, 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 round.
Stick around.
And I'll be damned if I can't slow dance with you. Ooh. Come pour some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a bitch, come take it to the floor now. Ooh. There's a tornado.
Hello everybody, I'm Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're all about real news and great conversation. And as soon as Donald Trump takes office, there's going to be a lot of real news we'll have you covered here. My very special next guest is Bobby Cogan. He is the Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He served in the Biden-Harris White House as advisor to the director of the Office of Management and Budget. And before the Biden-Harris administration, he was a policy advisor and budget coordinator for the transition team. And he's also served on the Democratic staff of the U.S. Senate Committee on the Budget as the chief mathematician and head of budget analysis, budget concepts, and budget scorekeeping. So yeah, he can't do any math at all. Real dim bulb, Bobby. Thanks so much for sharing your expertise with us this bright Monday. Let's just dig right in. What is the reconciliation process supposed to be like back in the old days? And what can we expect in this go round that might be different?
Sure, Maggie, thanks so much for having me on. So reconciliation used to be used as a mega bipartisan deficit reduction tool. Since the 90s, it has shifted and is now used exclusively as a partisan process to avoid the filibuster. So normally in the Senate, it takes 60 votes to do anything. It's hard to get 60 senators to agree to stuff. If you follow the specific rules of budget reconciliation, of which there are many, then you can do it with only 50 votes plus the VP. So, with a simple majority instead of 60 votes. And so in today's day and age, it will, we should see it as a tool for Donald Trump to be able to enact some of his agenda, make some of it incredibly real.
And so what do you think are sort of in the top three or top five things that we can very reasonably expect to see in the reconciliation process? And then secondly, Bobby, why is the reconciliation process a bad, other than the filibuster, right? And the voting threshold, which is itself a process issue, right? But why is the reconciliation process itself not a great place to be forging new policy?
Sure. So I'll take the second one first and then go to the first question. The reconciliation, because of all of its limitations, the normal things that you would want to do when you're writing legislation to try to make sure the money is going to be directed in the right sort of way to make sure that it's going to do what you want, a lot of those things cannot make it through the limitations of reconciliation. So as a result, instead of being kind of a surgical endeavor, it ends up being a blunt hammer. So it's fine, right? You can do a lot of major stuff, but if Congress were working right, then you wouldn't rely on reconciliation. And actually in the past, when they would do stuff in a major bipartisan way, they would just ignore the rules of reconciliation all the time anyway. But nowadays it is just this very narrow thing. So what can we see? We are definitely gonna see Trump tax cuts 2.0. Trump tax cuts 1.0 were done through reconciliation. 2.0 will also be done through reconciliation. We will almost definitely see border, defense, climate, right? So they have signaled desire to increase defense spending, to increase money at the border, wall, deportation squad, kind of detention facilities. Other stuff, asterisk, that's where you start getting into some of the rules of what you probably can't do. And then energy, TBD on what that means. It could be something like more leasing of oil the United States government owns, but it could be something like repealing the green energy investments from the IRA, which would end up like raising energy prices on a lot of consumers and also on small businesses. And so that's where we're going to have to see. And then there's the other stuff that they have been floating. Just the other day, House Budget Committee Chair Arrington put out his kind of like wish list, and it included like $2.5 trillion of healthcare cuts, Medicaid and ACA cuts, you know, eviscerating SNAP and TANF and childcare stuff. So that's, you know, that's where we have to see if they have the votes. I mean, this stuff is incredibly real, but it's, you know, it's where their narrow margins start to really matter.
So will there be one big reconciliation bill, or will this comes in drips and drabs and we've got to track a bunch of different things? From an attention perspective, how do people keep their eye on this? Because holy cow, let's just see what you ticked off. Energy and environment, right? Childcare, kids' meals, climate, defense, the border, and of course, the thing that'll probably cost the middle class the most in the end, the Trump tax cuts for billionaires and the biggest, most wealthy corporations. How do we keep our eye on all this? How's it going to move?
Yeah, so the Republicans still have to figure out what they want to do. They don't know what they want to do because their factions can't agree. I think even though they have a slim majority, there's lots of disagreement. As you mentioned, the Trump tax cuts are incredibly expensive, right? Like we're talking $4 trillion. So some of them are uncomfortable with how large that is. So then some of them say, okay, well, we want to do a lot of cuts then so that we're not increasing the deficit and debt so much. But then some of the cuts they're asking for are really nasty. I mean, they're really brutal. They would kick millions of people off their health insurance. They would, you know, severely increase food insecurity and number of unhoused people, right? So all of a sudden, if you put that in, you might lose a couple votes. If you lose a couple votes, the whole thing might fall apart. So then they say, well, let's put in this, you know, whatever, right? And so all of a sudden it becomes difficult. It could all be done in one bill. It could be done in multiple bills. Majority Leader Thune in the Senate supported a two-bill, maybe third-bill approach. In the House, they really want to do one. The president-elect suggested that he supported one, but then he kind of immediately walked it back and said, "Oh, well, you know, whatever Congress can agree on." I think it's TBD. We'll just have to see. You know, are they going to take the easy stuff first and then leave the harder stuff till later? Are they going to try to, you know, kind of grease the wheels with the easy stuff? We'll just have to see. In BBB, which like kind of famously failed, right? When we tried to do that in the Biden administration, we ended up with the IRA, which still did a lot of good, right? It was the biggest clean energy investment in US history. And it was paid for by making prescription drug prices lower, taxing corporations. Like it was still great, but the original bill would have done so much more. It would have transformed us into a much, you know, bigger, better social democracy with childcare and pre-K and that sort of stuff. And it fell apart because there were so many things to track. People didn't know what to do. They just heard tough stuff. It was hard to message. Republicans are going to run into kind of the same issue.
It's fascinating to me that very issue, how slim the majorities are, right? It's like, oh yes, Donald Trump controls all three branches of government. Well, when you look at the legislature a little bit more closely, it is razor thin, and trying to keep those coalitions together is certainly going to be really difficult. Why does a party want to use the reconciliation? Is it merely to avoid the filibuster? Is that the why behind this? Because it has all these restrictions on the what's and very specific procedural rules as well. It's just about the filibuster.
Yeah, that's right. It is literally just about the filibuster. Now, I'll just say for some pieces of legislation, you can do most of what you want. This, you should think about reconciliation as being about getting federal dollars and cents in or out of the government. That's what it's for. And so every provision needs to be kind of, that needs to be its primary and kind of full purpose or a term and condition necessary to make it happen. So if you're doing a tax bill, that's great. That's easy. That's taxes are about dollars and cents. When you want to do spending, well, the primary aspect of the spending is about dollars and cents, but some of the conditions you want to do might not be about that. So tax bills, Republicans can basically do anything they want. And similarly, when we were raising taxes through reconciliation on corporations, that was no problem. It's just when they start to kind of do a lot more policy that they run into issues. And so, as you say, it is just a product of getting around reconciliation, the filibuster. It is not a good tool. It is just the tool that they have. And, you know, there are pluses and minuses with that. When we did the Inflation Reduction Act, we weren't able to kind of direct some of the money the way that we would have preferred to do. And that's just the limitation of our broken Congress. And I would just say, you know, if Republicans wanted to, they could search for a bipartisan deal on this, but they don't want to do it that way. They want to do it the way they want, which is their prerogative, but that means the limitations.
The other thing that occurs to me, even if you're talking about maybe two or three, but certainly Donald Trump's initial salvo being one big reconciliation bill, I'm gonna say this with as much respect as I can possibly muster. Maybe it's just going to be dripping with sarcasm. I put the odds at, especially members on the House side, having a full and complete understanding of the ramifications of what are massive budget and fiscal policy decisions and reconciliation bills at zero. I mean, especially if you're doing the big omnibus sort of reconciliation approach, there's simply not enough bandwidth in most House members' offices to really understand, again, for that particular constituency, like, wait a minute, what are all of the long-term impacts? And I'm going to make a statement and then ask you to correct where I'm wrong and your views on this, Bobby. And that is, if that's true, right, if they're really not getting their arms around all of this detail and substance, then isn't this at a certain level, especially in the House, about hammering talking points and about following dear leader a wee bit?
You are certainly right that there's no way, if they move at the speed they moved last year, they will know what they're doing. When they passed their tax cut bill, they had changed it so many times. I think the day before they did $500 billion worth of gross changes. There was no distributional analysis on who it would affect, how much, what the long-term impact.
I'm going to jump in and just emphasize what you said. The first Donald Trump tax cuts reconciliation, they did not know with their last adjustments to that package, the distributional impact, which is smart guy way of saying, hey, who's actually getting the lion's share of benefit here? The really, 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 really rich people or the middle class? They didn't know the answer to that. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about not knowing how it impacts people distributionally, meaning whether it helps the middle class actually, or really just creates a windfall benefit to the rich. More with Bobby Cogan. He is the Senior Director for Federal Budget Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Sorry I had to hop in there, but that was a big one, Bobby. And we got to take care of a little business of our own here, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about an unsexy thing, reconciliation, that will have big, big impact.